This is The Topic is Trek, episode 81, for Friday, December 18th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, the holographic doctor gets meta. Kirk and company make it to year four. We decide to not try to rattle off Philippa Giorgio's entire title. All that and more, right now on The Topic is Trek. A trip down Mirrory Lane. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Topic is Trek, where we talk about all things Firefly. No, wait, that's all completely wrong. Let me start over again.
Well, there were Fireflies in the last episode.
That's true. So we will be talking about Fireflies, perhaps. All right.
The topic is Firefly.
And as you can hear out there in the ether are my two co-hosts. So let me beam in the rest of their bodies. First of all, joining me from parts unknown, even though his voice is already here, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Happy Life Day.
Oh, please no.
No.
It's a holiday, but we're not celebrating. No.
What? Come on.
Grandpa Itchy passed away at this time last year. It's a very sensitive time.
We've already been through that holiday special one too many times. And
wait a minute. I even got a card from Chewbacca's family, you know.
So, oh, yeah. That's nice.
You can't read it. It just says,
it says Happy Life Day. See?
And it's Grandpa sitting on the chair watching. Oh, let's not get there. Yeah. All right. So, and also joining us is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Oh, another Ractigino barkeep.
Keep them coming. That's all I got to say.
What's in Ractigino anyway?
Well, you know, when you go to a diner really late at night and there's that pot of coffee that's been sitting on the warmer all day long.
And the liquid is gone.
So imagine that has been sitting there for 3.5 months. It's kind of like that.
Oh, okay.
Very potent stuff.
Yeah, apparently.
All right. Well, we have a lot of ground to cover this evening. We're going to be giving you some stories and subspace chatter. We're going to have a special feature from Craig. Then we're going to be discussing the two most recent episodes of Star Trek Discovery. And we have a warp speed roundtable question, which I forgot to get the feedback from the people that gave us feedback on that. So I will try to do that at some point during the show. But right now, why don't we start off by opening up subspace chatter, if that is okay with you.
Charlie!
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
All right. Well, let's move on to our first story then, and Chuck is going to tell us about it.
It seems as if Emma Watts, the new president of Paramount Pictures, has officially pulled the plug on Noah Hawley's Star Trek project. Oh, wait, we need one of these. Speaking with Deadline.com, Hawley said that the project had come very close to going into production, but that, quote, in this business, that doesn't mean much.
Apparently not. Wow.
As we've reported in the past, Hawley's script would have brought in a new cast of characters and focused less on action.
Well, that kind of stinks because, you know, I've been a proponent for movies or Star Trek, more Star Trek that was thought provoking rather than always getting the action parts.
But I like a good mix.
But, I like a mix. Yeah,
I mean, we don't need a Michael Bay in every episode,
which is what we've had.
Well, speaking of action, And regarding another movie option we've been following, Mark L. Smith recently spoke about the script he wrote for Quentin Tarantino's proposed Star Trek movie, which I'm sure was a little bit more action-based. He told SFX Magazine, quote, "Kirk is always just so fun. Tarantino and I had so much fun with him because Kirk is just William Shatner, you know? It's like you're not sure who is who, so you can kind of lean into that because you watch Chris Pine and he's playing Kirk, but he's also playing William Shatner a touch." Which you can't argue with that.
That's right.
I feel like someone slipped a reality disc somewhere.
Someone slipped a reality disc somewhere.
It's like, well, you know, William Shatner, yeah, he defined Kirk. So therefore, Pine is going to have some of that character role in there. But I see them as two different Kirks, kind of like there's two different Dumbledores.
Yeah, they're similar, but different.
Or two different Darrens on Bewitched. How far back do we have to go on this?
Just swap them out without saying their name, you know, without recognizing it at all.
Hey, they were both
seamless, absolutely seamless.
Dick Sargent, right. Dick York. Nobody. Hey, when I was like 5 years old, I didn't notice.
Yeah, I didn't either.
You didn't?
But hey, you may notice this. It looks like Paramount President Watts may be taking another look at us at a sideline follow-up to Star Trek Beyond, which is exactly what we're talking about here.
Just going to bring back Noah Hawley's thing from two paragraphs ago.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the project that would bring back all the Kelvin crew along with Chris Hemsworth and James T. Kirk as James, as his dad. And you may recall, sound like Porky Pig there.
That's all track, folks.
Yeah. And you may recall that the salary negotiations with Pine and Hemsworth broke down, effectively ending the project. However, Chris Pine and other Kelvin timeline actors have recently expressed interest in returning to the Enterprise. I think they're all on board, so to speak.
They're not on board, but they're all on board, right?
Yeah.
Beam them on board.
I dig the Kelvin timeline, so I want a little bit more, but let's move it along.
But they're all, I mean, we've got a couple of people that are in various stages of busy. I know that Chris Pine has just inked a deal with Paramount as well, that he's going to be starring in a Dungeons & Dragons movie. That's all the details I think there are on that one, though, so I don't know any more about that. And then Zoe Saldana is working on the Avatar movies, and I'm not sure, do we know if they finished filming those
yet? I think all that's done, because it says it's been delayed. I think it's supposed to come out already, so it was delayed because of the earthly pandemic we're in.
But then she'll also be, whenever they decide, unless they've already picked a starting date for the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So some of these wheels are in motion.
Yeah, they have to kind of come up as well.
Well, like I said, when they shut down production on movies, the writers have a field day. They can just go whole hog writing because there's nothing else to do.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's go from the world of the big screen to the really, really small screen.
Yeah, I've got some of these people on my shirt.
It came out like one when you could watch your Casio watch TV.
Yeah,
tiny screen,
exactly like that, right. But not.
Over the summer, Robert Picardo launched his own YouTube channel, namely, surprisingly enough, Robert Picardo.
What?
After already giving us an original music video entitled "Spent My Life as an Actor," where he pokes fun at his career versus that of Brent Spiner, now Picardo shows off his singing chops by performing the theme to Star Trek Voyager. Of course, that's not enough. He also has a series of short videos where he rattles off some of his Voyager technobabble lines. Ooh, that sounds fun. We have a link to everything in the show notes over at episode 81 at thetopicistrek.com.
Yeah, right. It was, I couldn't tell if these lines of technobabble that Picardo was rattling off were ones that just stuck in his head, and so he knew them by heart, but some of them were very, very Trek technobabble-y.
Or if he was just making them up based on Trek technobabble.
Well, he's pretty good at speaking clearly and quickly, so he can rattle off some of that stuff pretty easy, I'm sure.
Right, because he at the end of each one of them, he says, and that is from episode so and so, and he gives a title, and then he says every time, but you knew that already, didn't you?
Oh my gosh, he's a Star Trek nerd.
That's right. And here's some late breaking news from many parts of the world that have not been able to officially watch Star Trek Lower Decks. Amazon Prime has just announced that they will be distributing the show for a number of international territories, including the UK and Europe and Australia and New Zealand and Japan and India. So hang on, rest of the world. Badgie is on the way.
And so is Shaxx.
I don't think that's a good thing necessarily.
Badgie.
And finally, keeping a tab on all things Viacom CBS, the newly merged company is becoming a bit smaller. That's because it has announced the sale of publishing company Simon & Schuster to the world's largest book publisher, Penguin Random House. The price tag? A mere $2.175 billion in cash, please.
Ching.
Yes, exactly. Eric said it all there. Of course, readers of...
Sorry, I was a little late.
...of Star Trek books know that Simon & Schuster is the publisher of more than 800 Star Trek books, audiobooks, and ebooks. There's no word yet on what the sale of the company means for the future of Star Trek titles under their license. I don't know. I feel like, you know, Star Trek is probably a small part of this overall deal, but if Penguin Random House looks at it and goes, hey, this is making money, I don't think they're going to change anything at all.
Hey, I have a hard time believing that they would buy that without having the Star Trek, you know, tied to it, and along with other titles they have in there, because that's 800. That's a lot.
That is a right. lot. I didn't realize there were that many.
I don't think it's that many Star Trek books. I think they're publisher of 800 books.
Simon & Schuster is the publisher of more than 800 Star Trek books, audiobooks, and ebooks.
But they might categorize one book as it's a book, it's an audiobook, and it's an ebook.
Coloring book.
And a coloring book. Yeah.
Cooking is book, there really piano. 800 books? How could you?
They've been publishing Star Trek stories for a long time, so conceivably could be 800.
Over 50 years.
Yeah,
Craig.
You're right. I mean, in the article, that states what you just said. It is also the home of more than 800 Star Trek books, audiobooks, and ebooks. Wow.
And cookbooks. Don't forget How to Cook Kelpian.
Boy, Enterprise was really busy. The Enterprise. How much lithium they had to use to get it through all those stories?
That's what caused the burn.
Exactly. It was all those books. Another story. We have to do another story this week.
You're going to be kidding me. Another, yeah. They burned through the lithium.
Wait a minute. We've got Burnham and Book Burnham.
I see the connection there. It's all interwoven.
Ooh. Michael Burnham. Oh, it's her. She did it.
Burnham.
It's Fahrenheit 451. Michael Burnham books. Oh,
okay. Burnham damn near killed him.
All right. let's leave that behind, shall we? And we have no new news out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada this time around, but...
Are they still there?
They are still there, but we did find some Trek news coming out of Alberta's neighboring province of British Columbia.
Hmm.
During his recent swearing-in ceremony, British Columbia Premier John Horgan, a longtime Trek fan, used the Vulcan salute rather than simply holding up his right hand. When a reporter asked him a question about the Vulcan salute, Horgan said he didn't even realize he was doing it until after the ceremony. Quote, I didn't mean any disrespect, he said. I wasn't sending a signal to geeks everywhere, but that's who I am.
You sure his name isn't Premier John Horgan?
That's what I was going to get.
Well, so much I don't joke, think, there'd have to be an apostrophe in this someplace because they love the apostrophes if that's the case. But
everybody, please welcome John Horgan.
Well, you know, it's safer than shaking hands these days. Just give him a Vulcan salute.
That's right.
That's right. He was just. Proper procedure by doing that. There was also, he definitely has a geek cred because it was several years ago. This is before Discovery was filming in Canada. He was in his office and he had his Next Generation metallic badge on. So definitely one of our own.
And how many stories do we have that we can't air this week, Clinton?
Well, we have links to 101 Dalmatians. No, 101 additional stories we didn't have time to cover. Wow. That's right, 101.
Did someone say 101?
Yes.
Here's your homework for next week.
You get a test.
Christmas break.
Yeah.
Now you're going to find everything from articles about new regional creation conventions with Star Trek guests and the proposed battle scene we never got to see in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
What?
To an article on how Star Trek and Star Wars teamed up to win the Great American Lights Fight. And for all you very, very last-minute shoppers, links to articles with great Trek-themed gifts. Man, you have to be really late to be ordering them now, but have you covered just in case. Just go to the show notes for episode 81 over at The Topic is Trek. Knew it was coming.
I think your audio blipped out right as you said .com. That's okay.
All righty. But it's time now to disconnect from subspace chatter and say goodbye to Charlie.
Get out, Charlie.
I want to stay.
You know, I just watched that episode the other day.
Brings a tear to your eye.
And we're thinking
it?
That same thing. Oh, look.
Yeah. Oh, I know when he says that on our show. Yep. All right.
Now, before we go out on our main mission, we have an away team mission. Because Craig is going to give us his thoughts on the Star Trek Year 4 comics. So, yes. Craig, tell us about it.
Yes, right. So, this is Star Trek Year 4. We were talking about Year 5 the other day in one of our episodes, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to review this comic. Well, or comics. And so I started looking. And I went, of course, they have a Star Trek Year 4. So I thought I'd start there. So Star Trek Year 4 has 6 issues. These came out in 2016, if I'm correct. And I should have wrote that down. It's written by David Tishman, and the artist is Steve Conley. And the publisher is IDW Publishing. And you can find these on Amazon, any place that have ebooks, comic books, or even your comic book store. But there's 6 issues. And overall, I'm not going to sum up each individual story, but overall, the art is a little bit lacking from what I would expect from a Star Trek comic. Because,
really?
You know, obviously they're not constrained by budget. So you could think they could get away with a little bit more. It looked a little bit on the Sunday morning, you know, Sunday cartoon and the paper kind of look. But aside from that, I thought they got the voices right for all the characters. As I was reading it, I really didn't have a problem following along that, obviously this is Scotty and this is, you know, Spock speaking. It was in my head. It kind of worked. The stories were okay. I would say I went back and looked at issue 2. I read it twice because the story seemed like it wrapped up and got into this weird place. And I wasn't even sure it was over. That was kind of weird. So I don't know what was going on with that episode, that issue, but overall, I think if you're a TOS fan, you may like this. I think it kind of followed along. I was hoping for something a little bit deeper, maybe. I know it's a comic, but I thought it was pretty good. Like I said, the art could have been a little bit better. So I'm hoping for a little bit more. There's another set of issues. I think there's 5 of them in Star Trek Year 4, The Enterprise Experiment. And I'm going to take a look at that one next. Oh, they did mention some things like Bajor. I noticed that.
The advantage of hindsight when doing TOS stuff now.
Yeah. Actually, I read over it and I went, wait, did he just say Bajor? I had to go back and, yeah, that's what he said. And they did have characters in there that we saw in the animated series. We saw Imris and Eryx is in the comic. So they were trying to include a lot of the animated characters that we've seen before.
Neat.
So was this better than the animated series? Some of the stories were, but I think they were kind of in line with that. So, yep.
Cool. Okay. And so you've seen the artwork for year five, or have you? Have you seen? I know we've linked to articles. How does do you think that the artwork compares between these and the new stuff?
Let's see. I don't think I really looked at year five yet, because okay. As soon as I went looking for year five, I saw year four listed, and I went, oh, maybe I should start there. The year four Enterprise experiment is actually the same. I think it's the same writer. I'm gonna look real quick. I think it's the same writer. And no, I take that back. The Enterprise experiment. I see DC Fontana's name right at the top, and so it's got some different people drawn. I think, this might be a little different. So, look forward to hearing talking about that.
Okay, cool. All right, we'll get to more of that as the weeks go along. So we have to get, first of all, we have to get somehow Craig back on to the ship.
Yeah.
Because he was away on one of the shuttles.
Can you beam me back up?
Can you open up the doors?
Chuck, can you beam me back up?
Just come on in.
So we've opened a door. He was in a shuttle and he wanted to be beamed up. We've got all the bases covered. Now like, we're going to be back. You're back.
They beamed him from one room to the other.
Now we're just going to push him out an airlock.
Hey, does my butt look big?
All right.
Why didn't anybody tell me this?
Nah. Now, because remember, the topic is Spaceballs, the podcast. All right, let's go out on our main mission with an appropriate sound effect. That works for me. This week, we're talking about Star Trek Discovery, episodes 9 and 10, which are Terra Firma, parts 1 and 2. And what I thought we would do is keep going in the same vein we did last time around, just kind of rolling these episodes together into one narrative, if you will, and have a bit of fun with it. So we will switch off reading parts of this recap, follow along, and of course, spoiler alert, if you have not seen these episodes, you can pause the show right now, go watch the episodes, and come back again. But that's the end of the alert. Now we're going to
episodes 9 and 10, just to be clear. So
yes,
can't see those.
The part of the baboon will be played by Craig Stepp.
Ding!
As always.
All right, here we go. Remember that signal Adira Tall was trying to decode at the end of the last episode? Well, guess what? Still waiting. But then Stamets proves he proves he's seen the IT crowd and says they need to turn the program off and on again. Brilliant. I mean, it's not like the writers are trying to drag out this plot line or anything.
No.
Nope, nothing to see here. No. We're almost done. Yeah. Well, actually, they are almost done because they do get the message decoded. And the 125-year-old signal is a distress call from the Keyeth, a Kelpian research ship on a mission to investigate a dilithium nursery. Ah, oh, dilithium is so cute when it's a baby. Aww. Yeah, adorable.
What does baby dilithium eat?
Well, anything it wants to. The ship crashed on something that's at the center of the Varubin Nebula, and Dr. Isa, I have my own pronunciation, I'm not using it, the Kelpian who recorded the message.
Right there.
Yeah, exactly, who recorded the message said that a Federation ship that was trying to rescue them never showed up. Ooh, they were ghosted by the Federation. Oh, and Tilly says Dr. Aisha was also looking a little bit radioactive or something in the message.
Hmm.
So Saru keeps playing the message over and over. Not like he's homesick, seeing an image of a fellow Kelpian. Of course not. Why would you even think that, Admiral Vance? No, you shut up.
Hologram Admiral Vance seems a little ticked off about being kept out of the loop and all this. Mm-hmm. And he also wasn't cool with Book attaching an emerald chain signal booster to the Discovery so they could download data from the Kelpian ship. Echoes of the current China situation in our government. But hey, let's keep it on track here. Oh, and we should all totally ignore the fact that pretty much everyone keeps pointing out that there's a piece of Emerald Chain technology on the Discovery. Yeah, because you know that's going to happen. I still don't trust Book. And that's all we get about the burn, really. The rest is all about Philippa Giorgio's trip down Mirror Lane. I half expected Julie Andrews to start breaking out in a musical about the, anyway. So she's still having those weird spiky episodes. Dr. Culbert can't figure it out, but David Cronenberg, Kovich says that the problem is her molecules are being from a different time and a different dimension. He even brings in a visual aid. This is like,
it's like a PowerPoint.
Yeah, 31st century PowerPoint. I was going to say the same thing. A Betelgeusean time here. Soldier from the Kelvin universe wearing a next-gen onesie. Wasn't that a trip to see? He did not look happy in that uniform.
No. Nobody did.
Kovich said the only thing to do is let Giorgio disintegrate. But Culbert says, no way! Yeah, he said it just like that in case you missed it. You got to watch for it.
Totally did.
He asked the computer for help and suggests a lovely trip to Danis 5 near the Galactic Rim at the edge of the Gamma Quadrant. Because how did Kovich not know about this? And yet the computer has it. Oh, that's right. What was it? The ball.
The knowledge.
Ball of knowledge.
Yes. The magic eight ball of discovery. There you go.
We saved you. You help us. After all, they have to do something. By this point, Giorgio can't even hold her wine. Well, her hand goes right through the glass, but she can't hold the wine glass. So one jump later, they arrive at Danis 5 and Burnham and Giorgio beam down. After a way too sentimental goodbye to Saru and Tilly. Goodbye.
Heartstrings. And it's wintertime on the planet, but no one thought to bring hot chocolate. So Burnham and Giorgio started walking and they find this guy, Carl, sitting by a door, reading a newspaper. Wow. Who said print was dead? Speaking of dead, Carl shows Giorgio the headline that says, "She's dead." "Fake news, I say," she replies. Carl comes back with a, "Hey, check it out. This is tomorrow's edition."
Whoa, time travel. Dewey beats Truman.
So Carl says Giorgio should step through the door. And he does that little motion thing. Burnham scans it, and there's no radiation or prank water bucket propped on the other side of it. Nothing like that. So Giorgio goes through and walks right into the mirror universe where everyone is still all evil. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Especially Captain Killy. But the Emperor has begun to mellow, and she's not as cool with all the stuff as she was in the old days. Every time she turns her back on people, she's thinking, "This is not my beautiful universe."
That's what she's thinking in her head.
She's singing it. This is not my beautiful universe.
Well, where did that starship come from?
No, we can't play the rights for those. We gotta move on.
Yeah. Stop. In fact, everyone on Evil Discovery begins to wonder what's up with the Emperor. She saves a Kelpian, spares the life of evil Burnham, and even puts up with a Cirque du Soleil coming on board Discovery.
I love Craig's cold reads.
Yeah. But despite her best intentions, things start to fall apart. First, Landry dies for a third time. That's actually her job on this show is just to come back and die. I think she's making it her signature move. So she's the Kenny of Star Wars.
Oh my!
Star Wars.
Star Wars. Star Trek, come in. Oh my God! Laughing. You killed Landry! You bastards!
I mean for Arium and Colbert also to die in this one, but that's just twice for them. And even Spock would be jealous. and Giorgio kills evil Stamets. But he deserved it. He was also one who booked the Cirque du Soleil. And evil Burnham is a traitor. Then she's not. Then she is. Then she's not. Then she is. Anyway, and Giorgio is finally all, "These are the thanks I get for leaving you all the sweet prison food." And the Emperor stabs her awkwardly with a large sword right through Michael. It was kind of weird. But just like she did Lorca in season one, that must be her signature move. Classic Giorgio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and speaking of Lorca, that's all they do. Speak about Lorca. We never get to see him. Yeah. I guess he was off somewhere getting mixed up with Lorca Prime or whatnot. After all that, Giorgio is back on Danis 5 in the Prime Universe. Burnham says she only blanked out for a few seconds, but Giorgio's big glowing wrist monitor thing has 3 months worth of data. Or data, depending how you pronounce it. They're all both like, WTF, Carl. It turns out Carl is, as everyone on the internet guessed, the Guardian of Forever. Only now the Guardian wears a bowler hat and the center of the portal looks like the time tunnel on steroids. Mm-hmm. Carl said that he used to be cool with people hopping through, taking trips into the past until the temporal wars came along. Yeah, Discovery has leaned really heavy into that bit of history this season. So shout out to Validation for Star Trek Enterprise. Anyway, the Guardian split from its old planet and now hangs out on Danis 5. Discovery's fear data put two and two together and came up with Danis 5. The Guardian offers Giorgio a chance to jump back to a time in the Prime Universe when the Mirror Universe was still close by. You know, the Section 31 spinoff point in history. Giorgio and Burnham exchange goodbyes. Giorgio pretty much says that the whole San nightmare thing is a story for another day and jumps through the portal. Hey, Carl, that's a violation of the temporal accords. You're on probation, mister. Everyone on Discovery is sad that Giorgio is gone, but they know that in Star Trek, no one is ever really gone. I think they also assume that means they can't pack up her stuff and move into her super sweet, big, giant living quarters. Yeah. All right. It's time to discuss.
The floor is open.
So I think they got the name Carl from the old Rhoda sitcom show. Remember Rhoda? It was a spinoff of Mary Tyler Moore.
Well, that was Carl Tun.
Well, yeah, she would get the buzzer from the doorman down below. She'd go, "Hello, Carlton." And no matter, despite saying that, he'd always say, "Hello, this is Carlton, your doorman." So I figured that's Carl, the doorman for the Gateway Guardian of Forever.
Well, sure. I don't have a different theory on it, but I have a friend named Carl, and he's always complaining that the name Carl is always used in these things to be like the evil person or the person who's going to die first, you know, just kind of that type of thing. This time he gets to be the Guardian of Forever. So yeah. I guess that's a trade-off.
Broken.
I like how when he talked and said his name, he says, "Who are you?" It had that big booming echo voice from the 60s. So that was a nice callback.
I know. They're both talking because you can hear his voice kind of underneath the other voice.
I thought that was a really cool visual when they. I'm sorry. I like the visual when they finally revealed that all the splinters were everywhere. The door kind of exploded. Anyway,
the reason
it came back together, I was like, "Oh, okay." I wasn't even paying attention to the online speculation, other than. Early on, some people guessed that Carl was a Q, and I was like,
makes sense.
Maybe a little, but I just wouldn't buy it. But yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense, but I wouldn't buy it.
Well, it also makes sense that the inside of the Guardian looked like a time tunnel, because instead of the fog that was drifting down from above in the TOS. They were in two totally different climates. When it's cold, the fog kind of turns into this tunnel thing. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it now. It's like if they would breathe out, rather than seeing steam come out, it would be like a little spirally thing.
Right.
Come out of their mouths like that.
Yeah, watch my breath.
Oh, I get it.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were speculating that... that Carl was the Guardian is because the newspaper that he's holding at the beginning of the episode, it's the same basic newspaper at the end of the episode, because after all, only a few seconds have passed by. But first of all, it's called the Star Dispatch, which is the same newspaper that Spock sees on the tricorder that says, you know, Edith Keeler has her whole history. Mm-hmm. So that was the Star Dispatch. And then there's lots of other things on that newspaper that are all over the place. First of all, it's the Universal Edition, and it's delivering tomorrow's news today. It cost 15 quatloos.
Wow, that's some detail. Someone has a good 4K TV.
One of the sidebar stories is Starship USS Janola reported to be missing. And of course, that's the ship that Scotty takes out and ends up crashing into the Dyson Sphere. And then it says supernova threatens to Khan Empire, billions perish, which is that empire. I forget how long ago. Oh, I've got it here. 600,000 years prior that had happened. What else do we have here on these papers? On the back of the paper, we have a headline that's for a story, a little human interest story, saying good soup. And next to it is a picture of people standing in line to go into a mission, you know, a Depression era mission. You see an illustration of a woman with script above her head that says, "Let me help." There's Bajoran script on the above the what you would describe as the crossword puzzle, a sidebar article about Worf wins Batleth competition. And then really? We have some Vulcan script also on that back page.
Wow.
Wow.
That should be next week's question. What would you have put on the newspaper?
So I think that's the limited resolution.
Picard has started filming.
Yes, exactly. Wait, how did that get in there?
So I realized they needed Carl so that it wasn't a dead giveaway when they got to the planet and this door starts talking at them, or they see the circly rock thing from the TOS, that they would have guessed it right away. It's like, hey, what's the Guardian doing here? So Carl was. But
they didn't know the Guardian. They have no idea who the Guardian is. They had to ask what the Guardian was.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, but the audience would have known immediately.
Yes.
So I'm thinking, in TOS, Carl was really there. He was just hiding behind a rock, going,
"A question. Since before your sun burned hot in the sky, I have awaited a question."
Captain, there's a man behind that rock over there.
Pay no attention to that man behind the rock.
Look away.
So, I don't know. To me, the wraparound story in these two episodes, the whole thing about the burn, I felt like we needed more than we got out of this thing, you know. If you're going to have the B story, don't have the B story be, oh, we finally got all the data. Yeah, we should do something with that. Yeah. The end.
I thought that was a little thin, too.
This is a two-parter that's a Giorgio story about how she has changed as a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a little confused as to where they were going with this at first. Like, let's pop you back to the point where you're the Emperor and Michael's alive. Like, where are we going with this? Where are we going with this? She saves Saru. She's showing she's tender. They're going to eat her alive. it didn't really click until we got towards the end and went, okay, she's redeeming herself. And then when she does get back, it's like, but she's not healed.
So, you know, I thought it was also kind of awkward. I think how awkward this could have been for her, especially coming from the regular universe to the mirror universe, her prime, whatever you want to look at it. And she gave Saru some credit before she left. And then when she gets there, there he is as a slave, and they're talking about eating him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that was really the turning point, I think, for her, because she was sitting there going, no, this isn't right. And, you know, she... And when she told Michael, he's mine, I'm taking him back, you know, and wanted to save him. I think that was a big turning point for her right there.
But, I mean, she obviously still had a blind, well, and I think that also, you know, she just got through hugging Tilly. And now here's Tilly like, kill, 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 you know.
At least she's on my side.
but I think her blind spot was Michael, because, you know, she knew where she was. She knew how things worked where she was. And yet mm-hmm. she was going to try somehow to save Michael when essentially she's the one who made Michael who Michael is.
Yeah.
And Michael is just evil.
Yeah. Yeah. That mirror universe has to be exhausting to be always having to watch her back for crying out loud.
But I appreciate the fact that every time we go to the mirror universe, that all the people we know pretty much are all there. We see them get killed while we're there.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't get killed like 6 months ago. There's like Sulu was there and Chekhov is there and, you know, Landry is there and Arium is, you know, all those people. Then they get killed.
It's like that. Is the light on in the fridge when you close the door?
Exactly.
Is it moving? No. No. Is it moving? No.
The only person who didn't get killed? Lorca!
That's right. He did not. He did not. Yeah. And so now it's interesting because you have this void in theory in the mirror universe because Giorgio is going to die.
Yeah.
And you got this huge power struggle.
Michael's dead.
Right.
And does Discovery in the mirror universe have spore drive?
It didn't use its spore drive to get where it was going. So I noticed I'm assuming that. It does not.
Oh, speaking of notice, did you notice the opening on part two? The opening animation.
Oh, yeah, it was all negative and backwards.
It was kind of bluish tint. Down. And a lot of the graphics were upside down, like the little wormy spore thing where the pot
opened. It was all upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. Even the it took me a minute to realize that it was actually upside down as well.
Well, the very beginning, you notice that the color is shifted. Right. It's now blacks and blues rather than the parchment
it's like a negative
brown.
Yeah.
But the first couple of shots, it's hard to tell because you just have the crystal floating by and the ship being assembled and the schematic. So that's, as soon as you go to the shot after that, you go, wait a minute, this is upside down.
Yeah. And you get to the comm badges. It's like, all the Delta shields are upside down. What?
Yeah. Right.
But they didn't use, I thought it was interesting, they didn't change the animation to have the shields be the Terran Empire, you know, sword through Earth.
Yes.
Hey.
Thing.
Budget.
This would be a lot quicker.
For other things.
A lot quicker to animate if we just take the frame and invert it and tint it.
Can we just make a negative and flip it? Okay.
Worked for me. Let's go.
Hey, FYI, they don't have the new Discovery badges on Amazon. Just saying.
Oh, which they hurry up.
I know. Because I went looking. I was like, okay, they just saw them like the week before. Maybe we won't. They're not on Amazon yet.
Sure, somebody can 3D print one for you.
I'm sure. Well, I did see that.
Our legions of fans are out there.
Yeah.
And we made a joke about it, but that was my first thought that does Landry hold the record now for most times a character has died in Star Trek? I mean, she has full on died 3 times on that show as that character, not a relative, you know, yes, it's a mirror universe version of it, but that character has now died 3 times.
Yeah. We went 900 years in the future. You think we'd be done with that trope?
Yeah, I was trying to think. So Kirk died. Well, I guess he went to the Nexus. They thought he died. So and I don't know if you want to consider it canon, but in the book, one of the books, you know, they resurrected him after on Viridian 3. So.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, include the books because goodness knows what happens in the 800 books. You know?
I was going to say even he didn't come back a third time, or did he? Well, there were several books he was in. So, hey, is it me or are y'all getting a little tired of the mirror universe?
Well, we'll be talking a bit about that in a scant few minutes. I don't know
did
if we'll be
say
going
scant?
Back. I don't know if we'll be going. Back there again, I think part of the open door of this is, although Giorgio is dead in that universe, since she's going back to a time where the mirror universe and the prime universe were closer together, is that leaving open the door to go back and visit that again? Because now it's possible to do it.
Probably.
I'm not saying Carl's going to let it, you know, be involved in doing it because he's probably like, oh, I have one and done. I'm out of here. But
they used it a lot on DS9. I thought they kind of overdid it on DS9.
I like how they got to the point where they didn't even like pretend that it was any effort to do it.
Right.
They just kind of, I'm just popping over.
They grab this soda can thing, hit the button and hey, Smiley, how's it going?
I mean, I just wonder, I mean, I know they had to wrap up Giorgio, but it's like, okay, we've seen the mirror universe a lot, okay, in Discovery altogether, right? I'm just like, how does it really propel our prime characters forward?
Well, I think that part of the heavy lifting that these two episodes were doing was to bring Giorgio to a point where she realizes she has changed to set up whatever's going to happen in her Section 31 show.
The different piece to this is, you know, they've been going between Mirror Universe and Prime Universe, but this time they use the Guardian to do it. He's never been involved with transporting people between universes, just between time in this universe. So I thought that was a fascinating piece. Like, oh, he's not just manipulating space and time, but he's going multidimensional on us.
Oh, he even said he didn't like people going over there. You can look around, but you can't mess with things. And
if you do, you got to fix it.
Right. Yeah. And probably said after that Kirk and Spock guy, you know, that McCoy guy went through, that's like, I got rules now.
Yeah, that point of your guy.
Fool me once, shame on you.
Sure. But it did, you know, raise and answer the question. Well, wait a minute, you know, people fighting the temporal wars, isn't anyone going to the, you know, the planet where the Guardian is located? Because that's an easy way. You just step through and try to do something to screw things up.
Right. No need to build your own time machine. There's one right there.
You don't have to go fly near the sun. Just.
But I picture just one day going, that's it. I'm moving and I'm not telling you where I'm going. Just leaves a note, no forwarding address. I'm just out of here.
Craig.
That's right.
Craig, you have to fly around the sun. If you got whales, they don't fit through that portal.
That's right.
That's true.
Very absolutely good. True. Yep.
So do you, I mean, we now have, what do we have? Three episodes left, I think of the season.
Three. 13 total, right?
Yeah. We're going to have to be very quick with what causes burn. If we're going to get a resolution on what caused the burn, do you think it's going to actually come to a resolution this season?
I think Michael Burnham.
Ba-doom-tsh. No, here, I just gratuitous for you.
He's here every episode, folks. I'm just telling you right now.
Try the Calpian.
Try the veal. Replicate the veal.
I'm hoping they wrap it up because, I mean, they've been dragging this out for a couple of weeks now. There's one of the YouTube reviewers that I watched who kind of gives a thumbs up. It's Trek Culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, several episodes ago, he was saying, okay, enough with the burn. We need more information about the burn. And I swear, I almost feel like we're going backwards on information.
Well, that's where I was getting at with we had two episodes basically for mirror stuff, you know, and I'm like, really? I'm kind of done with the mirror universe for a while because that doesn't propel our story forward. I want to see what's going on with, I want to get to this Kelpians. I want to see why they, you know, what happened to them and why this message was going out. You know, let's start digging in there. You know, I want to find out.
I still don't trust Book.
I really think he's starting to, he wants to be a part of Starfleet.
Craig, every season they've injected someone into the story, Lorca, that we can't trust. Who is it this season?
You think maybe he put that, that device on there to kind of seed where they're at and that kind of thing.
Something's up. He's being too nice. I don't trust him, Captain.
Right. Well, that's why I was saying that they go out of their way several times in the episode to point out it is a piece of emerald chain technology that's been attached to the Discovery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is wrong. Don't pay any attention to that.
It says Huawei right on it.
Pretty much a red flag.
Well, even the Admiral expressed interest or concern, I should say.
Yep.
You're right. And of course,
I think
Book trusted it or he tested it. You're right. Yeah.
And of course, the Admiral seems like, I thought it was interesting that he called Saru on something Saru was doing and Saru didn't up to it, which was that, you know, this whole issue with the fellow Kelpians, and was he kind of being distracted by that fact? Oh, no, no, not at all, not at all, not at all. I'm thinking, you're lying, because...
He could have just spit it out. The Admiral said it'd be, I understand if you are.
Right.
I just want you to own it. And he didn't.
And I think there were two pieces of information in there that were kind of being possibly glossed over or misdirects or something. First of all, there's the Federation ship that was supposed to be on its way in to rescue the Kelpian ship, and it never showed up, but they don't know what happened to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really have a resolution on that. You would think if they were done with it, they would have said, and they sent out a distress call as well, or they were irradiated, you know, something happened, but no, it's kind of left open-ended. And the second thing is when they're playing back the message and Tilly says she already is suffering from radiation, and he looks over, Saru looks over, I think kind of puzzled, and she's, you know, you can tell that she's, you know, the marks on her, and they're marks that are on her forehead, but they seem more like lines. And then you cut to a shot of Saru kind of just staring at them. And I can't tell if that's supposed to be significant or not in all this.
Well, based on the scenes, we're going to get that Kelpian ship next week.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, because they jumped there. That's what it said. Or that's what it showed. Yeah.
But we're also not going to get is a resolution to two things involving Giorgio, at least at this point, unless somehow she pops back again.
One,
that thing with Linus that I pointed out, like, near the beginning of the season, when she was saying, oh, your spectrum of vision must be, you know, such and such wide. And he says, yes. And he gives the, and then she goes, well, we have to talk.
Oh,
nothing ever came of that. And then we have several episodes in a row with San as this nightmarish flashback to the mirror universe. And she pretty much comes out and says, oh, I should have told you about San, but, you know, remind me of him and blah, blah, blah. And off she goes. We get nothing on that either.
Yeah. It's like, that's a discussion for another time. Through the portal I go.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, it's time to rate these episodes. If you gentlemen don't have any other thoughts on them.
I almost forgot about the rating part.
Okay. So it's tough on this because it's a two-parter. You know, you got to break them out separately, but I'm going to break them out separately. So we have part one, which we begin with them, you know, oh, by the way, you got to turn it off and turn it on again to get this information about the signal. We jump down to the planet. We get Carl showing up. She jumps into the mirror universe and things happen there for a bit. And then we cut to next week on Discovery. So on part one, what are your ratings for that part? And I will go first to Craig.
I liked a couple of the similarities to the original, the first episode where you see Michael and Burnham, you see them walking off in the snow, making the tracks like they did in the first episode. You can see where they're getting ready to start bringing their journey to an end. Overall, I liked Carl. I'm going to give this episode probably an 8, probably not my favorite one up there, but yeah, it's about an 8.
Okay. I will go next to Chuck.
I'm going to give it a 7. Thought it dragged a little bit. I thought I had interesting characters, but we didn't get the reveals until part 2. So it left me a little scratching my head going, what are we doing here again? There were some moments that were somewhat redeeming. So a 7.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to go with an 8 as well. I'm going to go with an 8.25 just to make things interesting.
Mix it up.
Thank you, Mr. Spock.
I didn't like the wraparound story of the Cigna, because I thought okay, really, we're now 3 weeks into this algorithm. Okay, mm-hmm. let's get on with this, shall we? But I liked several things on the planet. First of all, I liked Carl because it was just very classic Trek. Very Deep Space Nine prophets, Q, to have this character just sitting on an Adirondack chair with a bowler hat on, reading a newspaper and smoking a cigar by a door that has no building around it.
Hey, you know? Is that the weirdest thing you've seen in Star Trek?
Yeah. No, I'll tell you the weirdest.
it's perfectly appropriate.
And he was, his dialogue was very much that classic Trek kind of, not answering the question, answering the question.
Yes.
Stuff going on. And then I thought the best part about this was, is man, can these people keep a secret? So this is kind of boosted just on that fact alone. No one had any idea that they were going into the mirror universe. That was not on anybody's radar on any of these prediction things that I had seen about what was going to be going on. Mm-hmm. With this episode, they released no publicity stills about that being part. All the publicity stills were on Discovery or just in the snow with Burnham and Giorgio, and nothing at all. They really kept that so close to the vest. So on that alone, I give them some points. So for me, it was an 8.25. All right, now we're going to go on to part two. So we'll go in reverse order for part two. I'm going to
mirror order.
Yes, that's right. So I have to do this upside down as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to rate part two pretty low. I was hovering. I'm going to give it a 6.75 for that. I don't want to give it a seven, but I think it's a little above a six. I felt like the moment that Giorgio walked off of the shuttle onto the ISS Discovery in the previous episode and the look on her face, I could tell, okay, she has changed. That's the point of her going back here for her to realize that she's changed. And then we had an entire other episode about essentially that she, you know, had to figure out that she had changed when clearly she knew the second that she walked onto that ship, that this was home, but it wasn't really home anymore. And then we go back to the Discovery and we have more of, okay, yeah, we're not going to learn anything more about the signal at this point. We're going to wait on that until next week. Rebooted. So I think the acting of the characters, I thought, was the thing that saved the episode, that everyone played Mirror Universe as well as they did in part one. And I thought that at least if we're going to be stuck there, that they're throwing everything that they have at that, including, you know, double crosses and agonizer booths and, you know, Captain Killy, you know, gloating as she turns the dial to raise up the agonizer booth on Burnham.
Don't forget to mention the fighting for your job in the hallway.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that was in part one. Yes, absolutely. It's like, oh, well, that how that works?
Yeah.
Oh, I think we probably figured out that's how it worked in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah. And
promoted by killing somebody else. That was that whole thing about
who was in charge. It's all that crawling your way to the top.
Yeah. Well, because in the original Mirror episode of Trek, Kirk asked for the history of all the other captains of the ship and finds out they're pretty much killed the other captains. All right. So that's it for me. And Chuck, what about you for part two?
I'm going the other way. I'm going to give this one an 8.5. I liked the struggle that she had in the Mirror Universe. She wanted to try her hardest and darnest to reform and save Michael so she didn't have to kill her. But ultimately it didn't work because, you know, sometimes history doesn't want to be changed. Oh, sorry. That was a Stephen King thing.
Yeah.
And then the reveal of, boom, it's the Guardian. See, I was caught completely unaware because I stay away from the internet for spoilers like that. So I enjoyed the reveal.
It's my job. I got to do it.
I enjoyed the reveal and it hit me with full impact and went, well played. Nice callback. I think I even shouted out something and Donna said, what?
What?
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear to see Bonnie's reaction. She hasn't seen the episode yet. Alrighty, so 8.5. And for you, Craig?
I'm also going to go with 8.5 because I thought it was a nice wrap-up. I liked, as Chuck was talking about, her revelation that, okay, things have affected me mentally, and I've got a different mindset. So she was taking care of Saru. She was trying to also take care of Michael in a way to keep her in line, in a mirror universe way, taking care of her. I kind of felt for Michael after a while because they were kept waking her up, putting her in the agonizer, making her sleep in the agonizer, which, you know, there's not enough room in there. Superman can tell you that. So I thought it was pretty good. I liked, they were wrapping up, you know, Michael and Detmer were cleaning up their co-conspirators, and even that came and stabbed her in the back, so to speak. Didn't backfire.
Yeah, but you saw that coming.
Yeah, a little bit. So I think it was pretty good, especially, again, the callback with the Guardian and Carl and the whole thing. That was a nice reel because I didn't see it coming. I, again, wasn't online looking for a bunch of spoilers. Although, speaking of spoilers, I was looking at some news site and I saw Discovery dispatches a fan favorite character. I was like, why would somebody put that in the title? Anyway,
clickbait. One word, clickbait.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm going to go with 8.5. I think it was a good episode. I think it was good.
All right. So we're completely consistent between all three of us on those ratings. And that brings us back from our main mission. And it's time to go out. If you think you've had enough of the Mirror Universe, well, hold on a second, because it's time for our Warp Speed Roundtable with an appropriate sound effect. See, that's the same sound effect, but upside down and backwards. Well, it's not backwards, just upside down.
Just flip 360 degrees.
There you go. All right, this time around, we are going to ask, which version of Star Trek did the Mirror Universe best? And we have four options to choose from. We have the original series, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, and Discovery. We did put this question out for other people. Would you rather do the other people's opinions first, or you guys want to go first?
Oh, that's right. Let me go pull that up because
I've got yours, and I've got Chuck's, and I've got.
Yeah, okay. Let's go with the other people's first.
Okay. I will go first with this one here. I think this one's from my page. Gary Lindros, who replied everywhere with the same answer. So I'll only get one, Gary.
Don't
he said Enterprise. My friend Carl, yes, that Carl, said yes, all of the above. So there you go. Matt said DS9. Joe said, I think I give a slight edge to DS9, but they were all good. Aaron says Superman the movie. Not quite sure he understood the question.
That would be Superman 2, where he was drunk in the bar.
The Quest for Peace. No, that's a different one altogether. And Jennifer gave a long answer, but it seems like she finally landed on Star Trek Discovery as her choice.
Are you sure?
Then we have Thomas doing TOS, hands down, no questions. In every revolution, there is one man with a vision. Still gives me chills.
See, and I think somebody should have said that to Giorgio. Or Giorgio should have said it to somebody in the Mirror Universe.
Saru. I think she should have said it to Saru.
That's it. Yeah, say it to Saru. He's going to be that one man.
Of course, he's not a man, but there you go. Sean said, love them all, but DS9 is my favorite. Joe said Enterprise. Martha said, can you repeat the question, please? Martha Tomasi. So you got to explain that one. Jeremy said Enterprise. Mark said, I'd like to buy a vowel. Again, not sure they understood the question. Jeremy said, I mean, each gets to build on the last, so I'm not sure it's a fair comparison. And Daniel said, Mirror, Mirror, the original series, season 2. We have Gary Lindros again. I'm passing by you, Gary. You don't count twice. Jack said TNG, which is not an option.
Well, unless you're reading comics.
Well, we're not going to.
There was a mirror whole story on that. But
Paul says, and I'm going with Deep Space Nine. And Tommy also says Deep Space Nine. So it seems like Deep Space Nine has a slight edge there as far as the feedback goes. I will ask you gentlemen, anybody wants to chime in first on which?
Go ahead, Chuck. No, actually, who Clint, best? I want to hear you. I want to hear you go first.
I'm going to say who wore it best. I'm going to go with Enterprise because they had, to me, the most unique take on it. All had their, as was pointed out, all had their different things. Of course, with the original series, it was the surprise of going into the mirror universe. But Enterprise took the unique approach of beginning to end, including a custom version of the opening theme song, completely in the mirror universe for those two episodes. No idea at all, you know, that the Enterprise Prime universe existed other than the fact that the ship comes through from there. We don't see the Prime crew, and it's all just done as this is what life is like in the mirror universe. And I just appreciated that as such a unique take on all of this that I had to give it the edge.
They didn't have to transition you there. It was just like,
right.
Here it is. Right.
In your face.
Who's next?
I will be honest. I need to go back and watch Discovery. Or excuse me. I need to go back and watch Enterprise stem to stern again. I haven't seen it in probably 15 years when it was on.
Oh my.
So I do have some gaps there. I can't really rate Enterprise fairly. I thought DS9 kind of overdid it. They did it well, but I think they overdid it. It's like, all right, here we go. I'm like, Kira again. So it's, for me, it's down to TOS and Discovery. And while TOS had its charm and originality, I'm really digging the way that Discovery did this. I mean, they completely hoodwinked us in season one. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, this throwback journey thing, you can, you know, say what we did about Terra Firma parts one and two. It was fun to be there again. Come on. It was, you know, just to check out what's going on, who gets killed a third time. It was enjoyable. So I'm going.
Do we have four for anybody? Four. Yeah.
I'm going with Discovery.
All right. Well, I kind of agree with you. And let me put it this way. I think I like the way Discovery did it. They obviously fleshed it out a lot more because they were in it for a lot more. I'm going to also go with Enterprise. I think Enterprise did a better job with the original series as a close second. I thought that I liked the Enterprise one a little bit better because the custom intro and everything, the whole particular whole episode, like you said, Clinton, the whole thing was backwards, so to speak. So I think Enterprise did it best. TOS is a close second for me. Discovery's kind of weak. I'm sorry. Deep Space Nine was kind of weak on that. I didn't really sell it to me that much. But Discovery obviously fleshed it out more. But I think Enterprise and the original series did best.
Right. And I think they all have, as was pointed out, they all have the unique things about them, whether it was because TOS had to invent it and build it from scratch as to what it was, to DS9 kind of fleshing things out an awful lot more in that universe. And they leaned very heavily into the depravity end of things with their take on it. Then, you know, Enterprise was just all in, very, very classic Trek, I think, approach to the way they viewed the mirror universe. And then really gosh darn evil, 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 evil with Discovery. So they all have the unique takes on it to enjoy or hiss the bad guy in, if you will.
Well, I'm kind of in that camp right now. I'm like, okay, let's set all the mirror stuff aside. I want to see some Prime moving forward. So I'm ready to move forward.
So I shouldn't tell you about the last episode of the season? No. Stamets does an oopsie, and there they are. They're back again.
Hey, do you like nice Stamets better, or do you like the first Stamets we have better?
The grouchy Stamets
who seem to have
shown up a little bit this season for a while.
In the first season, grouchy Stamets.
Yeah.
And now he's like a mirror universe Stamets. You know, he's nice. He's all, you know, accommodating and.
He's gone through a lot too. Losing Paul, mm-hmm. getting him, losing, you know, Culber and getting him back. And now he's, you know, relating to Adira. So, you know, I like his transition where he's going with that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, and I also think that it's very clear that Hugh Culber has changed. So
mm-hmm.
I think that that's also going to be reflected in the way Stamets, you know, interacts with people.
Oh, and let me point out, Culber, he could wear that red and black mirror uniform pretty good. Mm-hmm. he looked great in it.
I still had prefer the
red
the
and black.
White.
He was like, he meant business.
Which was designed for the first season one, but they never got a chance to use it. So
I guess because he's a doctor, it's red. So you don't have to worry about seeing blood on it.
That's right. It's just to hide the blood. It's not to say there isn't any.
Like Deadpool.
Yeah, but you go in the Prime universe and he's all got white on.
I prefer the white. Just my opinion.
All right. Now, a reminder that next time, in addition to reviewing episodes of Discovery, we'll be reviewing the predictions that we made last December for 2020 to see how accurate they were. And spoiler alert, no one had worldwide pandemic on their list. So we definitely missed that one.
I think
we
all knew it.
It was implicit.
Given.
Yeah.
Like tying your shoes.
We'll also be making our predictions for 2021, and hopefully no one will have extinction level event on their list.
Can I name a species?
What?
If I name a species, I don't mean everybody goes extinct, but.
You know. Oh, all right. That's we can one or two, as long as it's not like humans.
Oh, okay. But Horda are okay. You know, wow.
Yeah, you're
pretty.
It's fine.
Pretty.
Yeah, they'll bounce back, whatever. But it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and try to warp on out of here. I don't want anyone else knowing that we've got that dilithium. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook and MeWe and Instagram and that light bulb over there in the corner. You can find me there as well. And who speaks for you guys?
I'll go ahead.
Chuck. I'm getting a little tired now.
All you got to do is search the internet for Technorama Podcast. You will find us. Or if you really like the easy way, chuckchat.com/Technorama. And as Clinton likes to point out, we're everywhere.
Everywhere.
Technorama Podcast, the flamethrower.
All right. It's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Shirt red, the on put, don't.
It's backwards. So it was Evil Clinton the entire time.